Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to Action Radio. This is Greg Penglis coming to you from the historic district of downtown Milton on the banks of the beautiful Blackwater River. And now let's get into Action Radio. Yeah, greetings from hot and humid Florida. We're getting to the weather that I expected when I got here, which is muggy and warm, and you know, probably thunderstormy later on today. And all these things are happening. It's kind of fun. So happy St. Patrick's Day. And I think this is one of those wonderful American holidays that is not really celebrated in Ireland any more than Cinco de Mayo is celebrated in Mexico. But we being Americans, we don't care. We're going to celebrate it anyway, whether you folks in your own country do or not. We don't care. It's our holiday now. So let's have some fun. Let's drink green beer and do all the things that us crazy folks do. I'm kind of on my own today. So if you want to join the show and call in, this would be a good day to do it. So 215-383-3832. I'm going to, I think, dial things back a little bit as far as, you know, the amount of, well, maybe not. There's a lot of information. There's a whole bunch of stuff, you know, that I have for you today, but I've been sort of kind of shortchanging my callers simply because there was so much information. And I really thought I could put this, you know, I thought I'd do it in one, you know, show, and then it became two. And now we're on a third one. And the reason is that the information is always changing. There's new information coming out all the time. I've got, let me see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. I've got 9 articles just to go through today. And that doesn't count the election correction report, which is now, actually. You know, I got a couple more on Wuhan, on the lab itself. One of the things I'll get into is the fact that we had Bill Gertz on the show. We're really privileged to have him for half an hour, but he was kind of sick that day too. This is a year ago. And this is when Bill Gertz broke the story in the Washington Times that the Wuhan lab either accidentally or on purpose released the coronavirus. And we didn't know the details then, of course. And he's got the best sources in the world. So you can go back and look up the show from a year ago. And I'm trying to get a search window into our technology here from Blog Talk Radio so that you just put in, you know, Gertz and go right to that show. And, of course, the show notes tell you where in the show to go to it so you have a better chance of finding, you know, the stuff that we have here. But what's interesting is that the Washington Times has since pulled those stories. So you have to read about the stories that Bill Gertz wrote. I happen to have a good memory, so I remember talking to him, and I remember the stories that he did in the Washington Times. They're very good, and they're very authoritative, and they're very accurate, and they were very much considered fake news by everybody else who's in on the agenda. So if you remember, just to summarize a little bit here, Event 201 from the World Economic Forum. Again, it's very interesting to me that the Economic Forum is the place where they discussed, you know, how to handle their future pandemic that all these world, you know, elite technocrats have been planning for since God knows when. And so they, part of the two big parts of that were to get money, which is what they've done. They've extracted, I don't know how many billions of dollars out of our money, and then extracted billions more to pay you for not working, even though they, after taking away your job. This has been about money, power. It's been about media control, because one of the major components of making this all work is controlling the media, of demonizing hydroxychloroquine, for example, which we went over at the end of the show yesterday. Hydroxychloroquine is the one, you know, arrow on the target that could have ended all this pandemic, you know, the excess, the crazy stuff. Okay. I mean, the pandemic itself, yeah, a lot of people died initially because a lot of people were vulnerable because we didn't understand the disease, and it being a newly created, you know, DNA, you know, molecule or virus that no one had really seen before, it's tough to be immune to something that you've never been exposed to. And so that's why a lot of folks died who were in nursing homes and vulnerable. And as the Italian study said, we're expected to pass away within 6 months anyway. And so it's a huge amount of misinformation, but controlling the information, of lying to you about hydroxychloroquine. Pearson Sharp just did a special on this Dr. Tyson, I guess it is, in Southern California, talking about he's cured 5,000 cases of COVID. He's lost 2 people, and he's had 6 end up in the hospital. Well, that's not bad. That's a hell of a lot better than anybody else's record, especially considering the people that did not, you know, give hydroxychloroquine early in treatment, waited until people ended up in the hospital, you know, were put on ventilators. And of course, by then it's too late. The whole point of this is to get treated early. In fact, I got some little sniffles and a bit of a headache, and you know, I've been sort of grumbling around for a couple of days. So I'm going to hop down to my local Frick's Pharmacy. So there's a plug for you guys. Get some probably some vitamin C, some vitamin D, and maybe some quercetin, which is the non-prescription version of hydroxychloroquine. It's not quite as good, but I'm not quite as sick, so it's okay. So it's good to have preventive things on hand just in case. And so that's what I'm thinking is maybe going on a preventive program, you know, because. Because I don't want to end up in the hospital. And even though I won't touch the vaccines because they have nothing to do with the disease, you know, and I don't wear a mask because masks don't stop viruses, doesn't mean I'm not, you know, careful in building up my immune system. I'll take my immune system over their chemical, genetic, immune, whatever it is they're trying to do. Okay. So anyway, so that's where we stand right now. And again, you know, feel free to call in and let me know what you're thinking at 215-383-3832. There, if you're wondering, you know, by Greg, as Rush would say, you know, where's your legislation? Where's your citizen activism? What are you going to do about it, huh, big guy? Well, let me tell you. When I get to the section on Newsweek's article on, let me see, I know it's right there, on Fact Check, yeah, are pharmaceutical companies immune from COVID-19 vaccine lawsuits? Of course, the answer is yes, by both court case and by congressional legislation. So the nice thing about that article is they conveniently left in the citation in law where that immunity clause is. So I've been looking for it. So Newsweek was kind enough to put it in for me. So guess what I'm going to do? Yeah, you know what I'm going to do. I'm going to probably spend Saturday writing the law reversing their immunity so that they don't have any immunity protection, so that they are fully subject to civil lawsuit. And then let's see where this vaccine stuff goes. And let's see who in Congress is going to do something about it and maybe, you know, put that into the hopper of bills. And let's see what you're going to do about it, you know, and the track record of you folks, and you're the listeners, you're the people who are actively involved, but the track record, you know, isn't that good. I don't hear people reporting to me, I sent this bill to my member of Congress. You know, I sent it to my local media. I called another talk show. You know, I mean, my reach isn't that big yet, but it will be. But if you want our reach to be bigger, you know, call up Gorka. You know, call up Mark Levin. You know, call up somebody. Call up, you know, Rush's, you know, folks that are still trying to maintain the Rush Limbaugh show, that's another story. Call them up. They got millions of listeners. Okay, and if you tell them, hey, we discovered something called Action Radio, and this guy is actually writing citizen legislation, and he's got a bill to remove the immunity protection for vaccine manufacturers. What do you think? I mean, that would help tremendously. You know, besides, sooner or later, they're going to copy us anyway and try and beat us at their own game. But that's okay. I don't mind taking, I don't mind sharing. You know, so share with these other shows, you know, see what happens. Anyway, I got a couple of opening, you know, little things here, and then we'll get to, just about a couple. And then we'll get on to the election correction report. All right. Now, the reason I do the election correction report is because the media isn't, and there's stories out there that are, you know, you get a story here, a story there, and what I like to do is group stories together into a pattern, into a theme, so that you can go, oh, that's a lot bigger than I thought it was, all right? And so how that works is with the election stories. There are court cases going on right now. I think there's 18 active cases. There's another, 60 to 80 cases that should have gone on, where the judge simply refused to look at evidence staring them in the face about vote fraud and election fraud and anomalies, I guess they're called. All right, so all that stuff's right there. And I don't know what the appeal process is. I don't know how you jumpstart this. I don't know how you kick their butts and say, you know, you better take this case because you're constitutionally bound to do so, or we're going to throw you out of office. I mean, that's what we need to do with a lot of these judges. You know, where's the 300 judges that Trump appointed? I'm waiting. Why don't you guys take some cases and do something? You don't just sit there on the bench and collect money. That's not your job. You know, you'll never go down in history as a great judge if you sit there on your butt and collect money. All right, I'm here to tell you right now. All right. Anyway, so that's something where that's the reason I do the election correction report. Something that really disturbed me, and I was reading this in the Epoch Times this morning. I'm not going to publish an article on it because it's pretty simple to explain. But Trump, in my mind, has lost all credibility. I mean, he really has lost it when he took up the advice of Dr. Fascist and made this big proclamation that everybody should take the vaccine. He's so proud of his vaccines. He's so proud of his warp speed. He thinks he saved, you know, 2.2 million Americans that were going to die, which never were going to die. It was all a horrible projection from the Imperial, you know, College in Oxford. you know, by this guy, Neil Ferguson, who, as I said, is above Category 5, you know, severity index from the 2007 guidelines, right? I should, you know, I really kind of botched the numbers on that. So let me take a second right now to let you know how this used to go. I didn't plan on doing this, but I want to do this right now. We're kind of free flowing today. And so whatever happens. So let me pull up the interim pre-pandemic planning guidance, community strategy for pandemic influenza mitigation in the United States. In other words, how to stop a flu epidemic. All right. And I went through the executive summary on this a couple of days ago. This is the first day I brought this up, but I keep screwing up the categories. Okay. So the way they do it is what they're really looking at is the case fatality ratio. In other words, the ratio of those who get infected and those who die. All right. And so the original category was 0.1%. All right. So 0.1% of those who get this and die from it, they call it a category one, you know, infection or category one, you know, pandemic. And that was less than 90,000 people. All right. Category two, they said 0.1 to less than 0.5 or 0.5%. You know, in case fatality ratio. And if you want to go more into that, I can look into it because I'm still not exactly clear on the concept. But the numbers are interesting, 90,000 to 450,000. So basically, to make it simple, 100,000 to 500,000. Right? That's still category two. So, you know, if you believe the CDC numbers, you know, at 500,000, then we're still only category two. And at this point, nothing was recommended under the 2007 guidelines other than to just, you know, kind of watch out and see what's going on. But they certainly didn't recommend any of the lockdowns that we've been under, you know. And so then they had category three was basically 450,000 to less than 900,000. Category four, 900,000 to less than 1.8 million. And category five is greater than 1.8 million people or a 2% case fatality ratio. Okay. So the whole point of the interim guidelines was to provide a stair-step approach so that you take a look at a pandemic and see how bad it really is. Now, if you go with the CDC figures of those who died from COVID, not with COVID, it's about 6% of the 100% reported. You know, it's like 94% died with it, 6% died from it. So that puts you to about 36,000 people who actually died from COVID. There's your case fatality ratio, which still puts you at a category one. And the recommendation for a category one was nothing. You know, considering we lose, you know, twice that to flu every year. Okay. And what do we do for flu? Do we lock down anything? Do we close schools? We do nothing. All right. So in other words, the guidelines that we're following for the flu, you know, should be the same guidelines we're following for COVID since they're pretty much the same thing, but we don't because they wanted to sell vaccines. And apparently the flu shot wasn't profitable enough. All right. At least that's what it looks like to me. And I think that's why a lot of this happened. All right. So let me kind of step away from this for a little bit. And I'm going to get to the election correction report. And so just to let you know that as far as I'm concerned, the only solution to the Biden insurrection is to, you know, legally remove him by means of proving that he was never elected president. It was all a fraud and making a situation so intolerable that he has to go. And, of course, Harris has to go with him. And, you know, from the White House to the Big House, it's time for jail. You know, for their part in it. Now, you might, you know, Biden might get off for insanity and not knowing what was happening. In other words, if he didn't know he was stealing the election, is he guilty of stealing the election? He's an old guy. He's not the one I'm really after. It's all the people behind him that I'm really after, you know, from Obama and Hillary Clinton all the way down to the election officials that and the election counters that pulled all those, you know, suitcases full of illegal ballots out from under the desk. All those folks, those several hundred people in the six states, they're the ones that need to be prosecuted, and the insurrectionists need to be removed from the White House. All right, so that's that, and then I'll be right back in just a second with our election correction report.
Action Radio, dangerously cool.
All right. So again, feel free to call me and you want to talk about any of these issues. I'm pushing buttons, you know, and trying to talk at the same time. And that's always dangerous. So you never know quite what's going to happen when I do that. But anyway, so yeah, 215-383-3832. So the first story in our election correction. This comes to us from Epoch Times. That's E-P-O-C-H. That's Epoch. Epoch. You know, in other words, an epoch of time, okay? Now, those of you saying epoch, it reminds me of Ewok, but that's okay. All right, and this is March 15th, 2021, written by Jack Phillips. Georgia judge might unseal Fulton County absentee ballots for fraud investigation. Isn't this great? Why are those ballots sealed? That was my first question. Why are we sealing absentee ballots? What are you guys hiding? You know, Maricopa County or in Arizona, they're burning and shredding and getting rid of, you know, all the evidence of their guilt. Because no, as again, remember my Greg's fundamental rule, you know, nobody destroys evidence that exonerates them. You know, people always destroy evidence that proves their guilt. So if you're destroying evidence, you're destroying the evidence that proves your guilt. That to me is like a confession. Okay. Anyway, so back to the article. A judge in Georgia says he might unseal absentee ballots in the state's Fulton County so that a government watchdog can investigate voter fraud allegations. Wouldn't that be nice? It's fascinating that during impeachment, the bogus impeachment was investigating bogus charges, you know, bringing bogus witnesses, you know, to give bogus testimony, and the whole thing was a lie. And that was okay because the Democrats were doing it, right? But when a legitimate judge wants to bring about a legitimate challenge to legitimate vote fraud, you know, then we run into problems and judges don't want to touch it because, as Jonathan Mosley, our legal expert, says, they're gutless. And I agree with them. You know, heaven forbid they actually had to make a decision, right? Although I think that's isn't that in the judge's job description to make, you know, decisions? Okay, even if they're unpopular. All right, here we go. Henry County Superior Court Judge Brian Amaro said he's inclined to order the ballots unsealed and reviewed by experts hired by Garland Favorito, an advocate of voting integrity, and this is from the Atlanta Journal-Constitution. Amaro, during a hearing on March 15th, said that if ballots are unsealed, there needs to be a plan in order to make sure they're kept in secret and kept secure. We want to do this in such a way that dispels rumors of disinformation and sheds light, Amaro said. The devil is in the details. Why do journalists always put, you know, the person who's making the quote in the middle of the quote? Why don't they just say, Amaro said, we want to do this in such a way that dispels rumors and disinformation and sheds light. The devil is in the details. I mean, doesn't that make more sense? I've always wondered about that. If anybody's a student of journalism, can you tell me why you break up? They all do this. I mean, they all do this. It's hysterical. All right. Anyway, so he says he made the comment after a lawsuit filed in the Fulton County Superior Court contended that fraudulent ballots were cast during the November 3rd, 2020 election amid other alleged irregularities as workers counted votes at Atlanta's State Farm Arena on election night. Yeah, this is the place where I think they put the big cardboard, you know, things up so Republican observers couldn't watch what was going on, and they sent people out, and, you know, and then they said, oh, we've got a leak. I think, is this the place? You guys remember? They said, there's a huge leak. Everybody has to leave, you know, except like five people would stayed around for hours and hours. Then they dragged cases of ballots out from under the table, and they started counting them like four or five times each. Yeah, no irregularities here. Nope, sorry, nothing to see. Yeah, move on. These aren't the droids you're looking for. These aren't the droids we're looking for. Move along, please. Okay, fine. Back to the article. The Georgia Secretary of State's office, which dismissed such allegations months ago. Yeah, that's Rapson. Is that Rapsenberger? He's as corrupt as any of them. You know, so maybe we should look into his, you know, personal stuff. And the governor of Georgia is no picnic either, the alleged Republican. I've forgotten his name. He's such an inconsequential person. All right. The Georgia Secretary of State's office, which dismissed such allegations months ago, didn't immediately respond to a request by the Epoch Times for a comment. Well, of course not. The guilty people generally don't respond for a comment. They say no comment, which is, like I say, in many times can be interpreted, if you want to, as an admission of guilt. All right. The judge, well, you can't say that officially, but, you know, we can always speculate. The judge discussed an order that would prohibit Favorito's group from disclosing their work without permission from the court, adding that he might appoint an official to oversee the analysis. The review of the ballots, according to Amaro, could start in April, as reported by the Atlanta Journal-Constitution. Isn't that interesting? You know, think about this. And you folks think that this is over. This is not just because the co-opted media is not reporting these stories. Doesn't mean that they're over. Anything but. I mean, they're trying to suppress them, but that's a whole different thing. Anyway, Favorito, co-founder of the Voters Organized for Trusted Election Results. What would that be? Oh, voter. That's what the acronym spells. In Georgia, VoterG, a conservative group founded in 2006, has blamed both Democrats and Republicans for leveraging election integrity for their own benefit. Oh, yeah, Republicans aren't exempt from this. You know, the reason that the stimulus bill passed is because of Republicans. The reason Biden is fraudulently occupying the White House is because of Republicans. Because I've said in many shows how they're going to stop this along the way, but they don't. Anyway, so that's what's going on there. In recent weeks, Republicans at the state and federal level have called for a variety of election reforms while calling on lawmakers to reject Democrats' proposals. Yeah, that'd be H.R. 1, which is a total scandal. All right, here's the problem. And I've said this before with Republicans, all right? They can scream bloody murder all they want about how horrible the Democrats are. It's too late. You know, when McConnell said, Mitch McConnell, the turtle, you know, who should be Senate equal, you know, who should be Senate co-majority leader, because, you know, the Republicans have 50 votes and the Democrats have 50 votes. So why are they not? Well, he gave it to Chuckie Schumer because, you know, Kamala Harris is a Democrat and she can cast a tie-breaking vote. Well, that's when they have a tie-breaking vote. The Senate by itself is 50-50, which means McConnell and Schumer are co-equal leaders. McConnell gave up that position because he's a wimp. All right. So when he complains about, you know, all the things he's going to do in 2022, and he says, we're going to bring about, he made this big speech yesterday. It was kind of interesting. And he talked about, firearm concealed carry, you know, reciprocity and pro-life stuff. And he talked about budget reforms and tax reforms. And he talked about a bunch of things. And I thought to myself, why didn't you do those anyway? Those are good things to do. You shouldn't threaten Democrats with that. You should have just done it during the Trump administration. But again, he didn't, because it's better to talk about things than to actually do them if you're a Republican. The whole idea of being a Republican is to fool fellow Republicans into thinking that you're going to do it next time when you really won't. Okay. Let's move on to the next story. Ken Paxton, Attorney General of Texas. This is from Ken Paxton. This is actually from his desk, right? Attorney General Paxton, federal interference in state election laws violates the Constitution. We know this to be true. The whole basis of the Texas lawsuit that went to the Supreme Court, that they are constitutionally bound to take. They had no choice in this. Now, they abdicated the duty anyway, but they have no constitutional choice. They had to take the Texas case against the other states, Wisconsin, Georgia, Michigan, Nevada, and Arizona. They had to. It's right there in the Constitution. Disputes between the states go directly to the Supreme Court. Do not pass go, do not collect 200. They have to take them. But they didn't. Okay, which means they're abdicating the duty and they need to be removed for bad behavior, except for Alito and Thomas, the only judges worth anything on the Supreme Court at this time. Jury's still out a little bit on Gorsuch, Kavanaugh, frat boy, and Amy Coney Barrett, but who doesn't take notes. But other than that, there's only two that I think are really worth it. All right. So Attorney General Ken Paxton joined a letter warning United States House and Senate leaders of constitutional deficiencies with H.R. 1. Which is what they're calling the For the People Act. You know, that's like the Affordable Care Act, right? It's another one of these mistitles. So H.R. 1 is that bill that you've heard about, which is going to it's basically the Democrat, you know, election in perpetuity bill. So if this passes, Democrats will be elected forever until the law changes. And so that's why – and it's unconstitutional because basically it tells – the states that they when the Constitution says you guys run the elections, well, that's not true anymore. Okay, so what this really is a constitutional supremacy bill, and as you know, the Constitution is supreme to any bill or any law, and so basically what they're doing, this law completely violates the Constitution, and if it goes forward, it can be automatically challenged, you know, in the Supreme Court. Well, we know what that's going to do because we already know the Supreme Court's filled with a bunch of cowards or leftists. Neither one of which are any use to, you know, patriots and conservatives and, you know, the country and Americans and those of us that, you know, want to see the country run as it's supposed to be run. Okay, so anyway, H.R. 1 passed the House. All right, and under both elections clause of Article 1, this is back to the article. It's not an article, back to the letter from Ken Paxton, is his press release. He says, under both the elections clause of Article 1 of the Constitution and the electors clause of Article 2, states have principal responsibility to safeguard elections. The act would invert that structure, commandeer state resources, muddle election procedure and erode faith in our elections. Okay? They're so worried about the faith. Do you trust the election process? Well, it doesn't matter whether I trust it or not. What matters is whether it's an honorable and a fair and a legal process. It is, how I feel about it is irrelevant. So they've sort of co-opted the Democrat line that it really matters how much your feelings count. Do you trust the elections? Do you believe in global warming? You know, do you trust the science? It's always emotional belief structure, which is kind of weird, right? I'm not quite sure how that works. Anyway, HR1 is in fact election fraud, and that's why I'm here talking about it in the election correction report. Now, this report is primarily designed to get Trump back in office. But I'm having second thoughts about that because of what I'm seeing now with what Trump actually is doing, saying, "Oh, we need to take vaccines again." And we need to talk about this on a separate show. But is Trump so disillusioned, so lied to, so out of touch, so completely lost from his original self when he ran in 2015 that it's impossible for him to come back to his old self because there's too much crap in his brain right now? And too much misinformation in his heart. And he is incapable of being president as he once was. That's a question we need to start asking. All right. Anyway, I'll do a quick thing from this, and I got a couple more articles, and I'll take a bit of a break, and then we'll get into more of the great vaccine story. Anyway, AG Paxton of Texas says, this act, and that's HR1, fails to live up to its name. It does not empower the people. It places them and their local leaders directly under the thumb of the federal government. Our founding fathers intentionally excluded Congress and gave state legislatures the authority to run state elections. Instead, this act flips the constitutional script and empowers the federal government to act as the election regulator for states. This act opens up elections in every state to widespread fraud, mixed messaging, constitutional violations, and the shuttering of speech. Should it become law, I will use every possible resource to protect our elections, state sovereignty, and the rights of all Texans. Because, as you know, I've said before, you are the citizen of the state in which you reside, as well as being a citizen of the United States. Okay? So, I'm sorry, I'm laughing at the next story. This is kind of fun. My new big hero, Mike Lindell. Mike Lindell is doing an amazing job. The Dominion voting machine empire, Hillary Clinton, Barack Obama, you know, international cabal with China, you know, well, I guess England, Australia, Italy, and all these other countries that were involved in spying on Trump, trying to, as they did, overthrow our elections process and put a fraud in office. Dominion is trying to sue Mike Lindell and basically break him financially. If you keep going, trying to, you know, tell the truth, we're going to make it so expensive for you that you're going to be bankrupt. You're going to lose your company. You know, your life is over. So this is financial intimidation. And so in other words, they're not trying to deal honestly with Mike Lindell's questions. They're trying to shut him up by making it too expensive for him to continue going with these ridiculous lawsuits. However, Mike Lindell, he's got a bit of money. He's got a lot of support. And I think he's got some backers we don't know about. Anyway, Newsweek of all places. Newsweek, they've done a couple of good stories. It's interesting. Anyway, Ayla Slisko, on March 15th, 10:47, you know, Eastern Daylight Time, MyPillow CEO Mike Lindell still countersue Dominion with two cases, you know, for company and himself. MyPillow CEO Mike Lindell said Monday that he plans to launch two counter lawsuits against Dominion voting systems, one in his personal capacity and the other on behalf of MyPillow. Lindell was hit with a $1.3 billion, that's what the B is, this is a lot of defamation, right? $1.3 billion defamation lawsuit by Dominion last month after repeatedly claiming that the company was involved in a massive voter fraud conspiracy that moved votes in the 2020 presidential election from legal, this is former President Donald Trump, I'll say lawful President Donald Trump, to insurrectionist, they say President Joe Biden. Well, I mean, that's true, though. See, it's not libel if it's true. Okay, so this is the funny part about this. Mike Lindell, it doesn't matter how, you know, what the lawsuit is, because Mike Lindell's right. They did do this. And so truth beats liability. You can't sue somebody for defamation, you know, what is it, liability, libel and slander. You can't win a libel and slander lawsuit if what they said was true. Okay, so that's the beauty of this whole thing. So all Mike Lindell has to do is get in court. He can't wait to go to court, right? Because he's going to get in court and he's going to present all his evidence. Well, here's what I said. And he can show, you know, absolute proof, his video. He can put all his evidence. You know, they can actually air out the whole election fraud right there in court. You know, and all the courts that aren't taking it, they'll do it in the civil case. See, this is brilliant, right? So then if this happens, now I guarantee you Dominion voting machines is never going to get to court. This is just an intimidation tactic. The last place they want to be is court, because if they're in court, you get a couple of lawyers like, I don't know, Rudy Giuliani, Jenna Ellis, you know, working with Mike Lindell, you know, getting up there presenting Mike Lindell's case in civil court. Well, here's the evidence we found, and this is why it isn't, liability, slander, or defamation, you know, because it's true. That'd be fascinating. Anyway, and he says, back to the article, during an appearance on the latest edition of former Trump advisor Steve Bannon's War Room Pandemic podcast, Lindell announced his plans to legally strike back, claiming that the voting machine company had violated the First Amendment rights of all Americans, as well as federal anti-racketeering laws. He says, which mentioned in the middle of his quote from Mike Lindell, you're also going to have MyPillow going after Dominion in a countersuit, and that's going to your First Amendment speech. You're going to have me go after them, countersuing them. There are two cases, one with MyPillow, one will be MyPillow, and one will be Mike Lindell. We're both going after them. This is Mike Lindell talking, obviously. They're a little different because one of them, what Dominion did was violate the First Amendment rights of everyone in the country by using bullying, lawsuits, and RICO law. He says what they say to news outlets is, if you get this guy on, we're going to sue you too. Mike says that's racketeering. That goes back to the mafia days. You probably heard this quote before. Right? On the same podcast, Lindell announced that celebrity lawyer Alan Dershowitz. Oh, here we go. I can't keep track of all these details. I'm sorry. Some of the stuff I learned as I'm reading it to you. Alan Dershowitz, who represented Trump during his first impeachment trial, was joining his legal team. Yes! I love Alan Dershowitz, even when I disagree with him. Lindell said that Dershowitz described his upcoming legal battle as one of the biggest cases, if not the biggest case in history, for free speech and the First Amendment. Wait, how about for voter integrity? It's pretty big for that, too. Okay. All right, I got a couple more cases, but I think I might want to let's see here. What am I talking about here? Yeah, I don't want to talk about that. That's boring. This is about the case of here we go. This one is kind of interesting. Let me do one more. Anyway, so Michigan court. Here's another battleground state. Michigan, this is from Breitbart. Michigan court, Michigan Secretary of State's absentee ballot order broke the law, vindicating Trump claim. And from what I've heard, this is similar to the Texas case that the Supreme Court refused to hear, which, of course, is basically unconstitutional, therefore illegal. They had to hear it. So if Michigan does it, it's going to be really interesting to see what the Supreme Court does. Okay, and that came from a friend of mine. All right, a Michigan judge ruled – this is Breitbart. Breitbart, let me get you a date. Kyle Olson, 16th of March. So that would be yesterday. Okay, a Michigan judge ruled last week Secretary of State Joycelyn Benson – Democrat, broke state law when she unilaterally issued rules relating to absentee balloting. Yeah, same as that other case we talked about, right? Okay. Legitimizing a key claim made by the Trump campaign in its legal challenge to the 2020 election. Benson issued several unilateral orders during the 2020 election, including sending absentee ballot applications to all registered voters. That's insane. She also issued, quote, guidance on how to evaluate absentee ballots, a move Michigan Court of Claims Chief Judge Christopher Murray held violated the state's Administrative Procedures Act. That's the thing that judges used against Trump all the time. You didn't follow administrative procedures. You couldn't do what you do. You couldn't come to that decision using proper procedure. That's what it says. All right. Move on past an official letter. State of Michigan, Court of Claims, yada, yada, yada. It says in the guidance, Benson said slight similarities in signatures on absentee ballots should lead a counter, that's a vote counter, to decide in favor of finding that the voter's signature was valid. So that's your standard? Slight similarities? Okay. In other words, what? They both are in English? You know, slight similarities. They both have loops, kind of. You know, that's no standard. Signatures have to match. That's the standard, okay? Signatures have to match the signature on file, not slight similarities, match. Okay. Do you want to allow your credit cards, for example, you know, can be signed for people with slight similarities to your signature? Would that be a good idea? Yeah, didn't think so. Murray ruled Benson violated the law, quote, because the guidance issued by the Secretary of State on October 6, 2020, which is, you know, right before the 2020 election, November 3rd, with respect to signature matching standards, was issued in violation of the Administrative Procedures Act. We mentioned that before. Here we go. I'm glad the court sees Secretary of State Benson's attempts at lawmaking for what they are, clear violations of her authority. And that's Michigan State Representative Matt Hall, Republican, no surprise. Quote, if she wants to make changes like these, she needs to work with the legislature or properly promulgate them through the laws we have on the books. In this case, again, the Administrative Procedures Act. So to make the story a little more simple, what's happening is the secretaries of state, they used COVID as an excuse. They said, oh, COVID's out there. We have to mail everybody a ballot, you know, and there's no guarantee that the person even wanted to vote. And if you've only got maybe, let's say, 60% of the people voting in a presidential election, and you're mailing ballots to 100% of the people, that means you got 40% of those votes out there which may not be used by the person they were intended for and can be used by anybody else. I believe that term is ballot harvesting. All right? So that's how that works. According to the suit, Janetsky, and this is Bob Janetsky, Allegan County Clerk. This is where the real action is, Allegan County. Sued Benson and State Director of Elections Jonathan Braxter over Benson's order, which Hall described as a mandatory directive requiring local election officials to apply a presumption of validity to all signatures on an absentee voter ballot. In other words, yeah, even if they in other words, this is a way to get as many votes possible in, regardless of whether they match the signature or not. So according to the suit, this is Janetsky again, Bob Janetsky, County Clerk, Allegan County, argued, the presumption contained in the guidance issued by the defendant, Benson, will allow invalid votes to be counted. Okay, but Janetsky did not allege that this guidance caused him to accept a signature that he believed was invalid. Okay, so here's the court opinion. This is where it came down, and I'll move on to something else. The court opinion concluded, nowhere in this state's election law has the legislature indicated that signatures are to be presumed valid. Nor did the legislature require that signatures are to be accepted so long as there are any redeeming qualities in the application or return envelope as compared with the signature on file. Policy determinations like the one at issue, which places the thumb on the scale in favor of a signature's validity, should be made pursuant to properly promulgated rules under the Administrative Procedures Act or by the legislature. In other words, Constitution says that the state legislatures run the elections, okay? These folks that came along and made up their own rules thought they could get away with it, and they can't, all right? But they had been because of failures of people all along the way, okay? So what we need to do is stop the failures of the people and go much more towards the proper, you know, procedures, and away we go. All right, let me play a couple things here. I'm going to make a selection from my many. I need more. I need more things for you. You know, this is actually kind of cool. This is a theme. This is when Anthony Nunez was here, and he used to do this report called Founding Principles. And when you think about what we're doing, we're really getting back to founding principles. So although it announces his report, just listen to it and tell me if this doesn't restore some of your patriotism and inspire you to do more of what we're doing, which is fighting for the election correction and election integrity.
Patrick Henry said, "Give me liberty or give me death," and he fought for liberty his whole life. Two citizens of Cuba stood on the shores with a raft, facing that same ultimatum, "Give us liberty because we are facing death." They made it to the United States on a raft, and so they had their liberty. Their son, Anthony Nunez, born American, asks all of us, "What price is our liberty? What liberty have we lost to government, to culture, to history, to public education, to society, and how do we get it back?" Join us every other Thursday for Founding Principles of Liberty with Anthony Nunez as he looks back to our founding principles to restore our liberty today.
Radio, part of the ADHD Radio Network, the ultimate free speech zone. We the people give our consent to be governed.
through writing the laws by which we are governed, and had the power through juries to nullify the laws by which we do not consent to be governed. At Action Radio, we don't report the news. We are the news. Every other show reports what has happened. We talk about what can happen. From the questions no one has thought to ask, to the answers no one has thought to consider, to the actions no one has dared to take. That is Action Radio.
You know, it's pretty prophetic stuff, the things that we talk about here and the themes that I'm able to create. I don't know where they come from. They just kind of pop out of my head. But it's a fascinating way to sort of put all this together. All right. I think I can dismiss those articles. And let's move on to our main topic here, which is the vaccine came first. All right, just to answer the question, if you haven't figured it out by now, it means you haven't been listening for the last couple of days. But the vaccine came first years before the virus. The virus was engineered to sell the vaccine. The vaccine was not created to cure the virus. Okay, let's get that straight. The evidence is overwhelming. I've been proving it for the last couple of days, you know, from many different sources, many different angles. And if you want to dispute me, go ahead. Give me a call, 215-383-3832. You know, all dissenting views are welcome. I don't care. I'll stand by what I say. You know, and if I'm wrong, I'll tell you. I'll say, hey, you know, you caught me. I'm wrong. Okay. But if not, then away you go. All right. Now, one of the institutions or institutes that has escaped criticism and serious investigation is the Pirbright Institute. That's Pirbright. Institute, which happens to be funded by Bill Gates, the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, all right? And they're in England, and they actually patent coronaviruses. And in fact, I remember reading a patent before. I gave the number on another show. And they had the qualifier that, well, yes, this is a coronavirus, and yes, it was invented in the Pirbright Institute, but it's not the coronavirus, okay? And I don't know whether that's true or not. I don't honestly know. Obviously, I don't have the gene code in front of me. You know, so there's no way to know. But it looks really suspicious to me. So what I'm saying is that there's a connection, that these folks do create coronaviruses in the lab. All right. So it's reasonable to assume that that technology might have been shared with the Wuhan lab, that Dr. Fascist knows it here, that it's all over the world, that people are creating coronaviruses. And it just happens to be a coinkydink that somehow this got released at the very time, you know, in order to screw up the election, ruin the economy, get rid of Trump, and scare the hell out of millions of people into taking a messenger RNA genetic, you know, altering device known as a vaccine, and away you go. But the vaccine came first, and, you know, and then the suspicion, the other connection that a lot of us are making is that Bill Gates, who has said many times, you know, that we really need to cut the world population down, you know, if we're going to have a sustainable future. You know, and people will look, and I've seen the defense of this on his own websites. He says, well, when I say I want to cut the world population down, I don't mean forcibly. No. What I mean is, if we create healthier living situations, if we bring more prosperity, if we develop the, you know, these countries where they have high birth rates, then people, this is, well, women will want to have fewer kids. All right. So they leave the guys totally out of it. All right. It's really fascinating to watch this. So what they're saying is, you know, the population will naturally decline if more women are basically working. That's his philosophy. And if healthcare is better, because people can invest, you know, all their healthcare, all their resources into two kids, you know, rather than eight, under the assumption that, you know, four of them might, you know, or 4 to 6 of them might die anyway. And so that's a fascinating thing. So his solution. So, but it looks like he still wants to reduce the world population. So, Now you got the value judgment. Now you got to look into this guy's soul and say, is he trying to cut the world population for, you know, horrible reasons that he just wants he's a wacko environmentalist, or do you think he's an altruist? Is really, you know, making, you know, women want to have fewer kids by making them more prosperous. You can take on that one. We'll analyze that as time goes on. Anyway, so I got an article here in DC Clothesline. Airing out America's dirty laundry from January 28th last year. Okay. Now, what's so fascinating about this is January 28th was about when Trump banned travel from China. Okay. And we talked about the Purbright Institute, but again, the Purbright Institute just disappeared. You haven't seen it in news stories really since, but I still remember it because I got a memory. And so I found this article, Bill Gates funded the Purbright Institute, which owns the patent on coronavirus. Okay. Now I'll tell you where it's disputed. And again, I'll leave this to you to make your own decision. So this article comes from Natural News, one of my favorite sources, which said, believe it or not, the coronavirus strain that's currently spreading throughout China and abroad is a patented virus that's owned by an entity called the Purbright Institute, which is partially funded by the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. That alone is staggering news. If true, that this whole thing was created, which I believe it was. I believe the coronavirus, SARS-CoV-2, was created. It was manipulated. It was, you know, altered in the Wuhan lab. It was made more deadly. It did have gain of function, which we talked about yesterday. It did have all these enhancements before it was accidentally released. Now, the question is, what I don't know, I know that the Purbright Institute creates coronaviruses because they say so. What I don't know is whether the Purbright Institute created this coronavirus. Natural News is reporting that they did. I think it's reasonable presumption to assume that, yeah, they're probably right. Okay. I just can't confirm it because I need some more corroborating sources, but that's where we stand right now. All right. Back to the article. The patent page for coronavirus explains that it may be used as a vaccine for treating and or preventing a disease such as infectious bronchitis. In a subject quote, suggesting that this is just another weaponized viral strain designed to sell more useless deadly vaccines, while at the same time killing off a few thousand or perhaps a few million people. Let me put that together again. Do you want to hear that once more? The patent page for coronavirus, this is on the Purbright Institute, explains that it, quote, may be used as a vaccine for treating and or preventing a disease such as infectious bronchitis, or maybe SARS-CoV-2, you know, in a subject, quote, suggesting that this is just another weaponized viral strain designed to sell more useless, deadly vaccines, while at the same time killing off a few thousand or perhaps a few million people. So they're speculating the same as I'm speculating, okay, that all this is a farce, that the vaccine came first, that the whole coronavirus was created as a marketing campaign to sell billions upon billions upon billions of dollars worth of messenger RNA technology, you know, masquerading as a vaccine when these people really have nothing, no knowledge of exactly what it's going to do. And that's why I'm taking the time to do this over three shows, because I really want you to understand that there's a lot we don't know. There's a lot we do know. There's a lot of implications here. And if you're stupid enough to take the vaccine, I have nothing to say to you. I'm sorry. Don't do it. Okay. My recommendation until they learn more about this, don't do it. Besides, even if you do nothing, you know, you've got a 99.97% chance of nothing happening to you from the coronavirus. Those are pretty good odds, okay? Even so, I'm still going to get some vitamin D today. All right, back to the article. A close look at the patent page also shows that the Purbright Institute owns all sorts of other virus patents, including one for the African swine fever virus. Oh, swine flu, good. Which is listed as a, quote, vaccine. Interesting connection. It is thus no surprise that Bill Gates is a Purbright Institute financial backer, seeing as how he's one of the most aggressive vaccine-pushing, quote, philanthropists. This is, if you want to check this article, it's on my Parler page, at Greg Penglis, okay? All the articles I talk about are there, unless I tell you they're not. So you can go check those out. Anyway, this article says this way, says the way this whole coronavirus situation is taking shape would seem to be exactly what Gates once proposed as a, quote, solution to the alleged problem of, quote, overpopulation. At an infamous TED Talk, Gates explained that vaccines are one of the keys to reducing global population levels. And what better way to do that than to unleash patented coronavirus on the masses in order to later introduce a patented vaccine for it? Isn't this great? That basically sums up the last 2 days of my show right there. Okay. And so, you know, I'm not just making this stuff up. All right. There's a lot of folks around the world in many different sources that believe strongly that the whole coronavirus was created to sell vaccines. And here's more proof of it. Let me do this again. The way this whole coronavirus situation is, and here's what's so remarkable about this. They knew this back on January 28th of last year. This is before coronavirus even really hit the United States. And they're already saying that they're always saying what's going to happen, okay? Which means they knew, which means the people who were doing it knew, and they had to suppress this information because they didn't want you to know, even though I started talking about this last March, Okay, so I was a little behind the curve. These guys got out in front of it, but I remember talking about the Pearl Bright Institute, I think, in February of last year. I can go check the shows. You know, it's not that hard to do. But think about this. The whole coronavirus situation is taking shape. So the way this whole coronavirus situation is taking shape would seem to be exactly what Gates once proposed as a solution to an alleged problem of overpopulation. I'm reading this again. At an infamous TED Talk, Gates explained that vaccines are one of the keys to reducing global population levels. And what better way to do that than to unleash patented coronavirus on the masses in order to later introduce a patented vaccine for it. Here's the part I don't understand. Vaccines are the keys to reducing population levels. I don't know about you, but as I understood a vaccine, it's actually a health measure that's a good thing. Okay. Why would you take a vaccine to reduce your population? Why would you take a vaccine to reduce your own life? So, and why would you take a vaccine, which is really a messenger RNA device, you know, funded by a guy that wants to reduce the world population? That in itself is insanity. You know, why don't you put a bullet to your head? It's the same thing. Okay. So this is the part I don't understand. You know, it's like why anybody would want to do this, but millions of people are lining up. Please give me the vaccine. Please save me. I want my life back. Okay. So in other words, go back to my show, buying your constitutional rights by taking the vaccine. It's really disturbing the revelations we come from. Okay. So then it goes on to say Bill and Melinda Gates hosted event 201 back in October. This is only a couple months after it, described as a high level pandemic exercise. Oh boy. What's further interesting is that Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation co-hosted a high-level pandemic exercise. And we've talked about Event 201, okay? Let me see what these folks say. That involved discussions of how, quote, public-private partnerships will be necessary during the response to a severe pandemic in order to diminish large-scale economic and societal consequences. See, this is why the World Economic Forum did this. Economic and societal consequences. Not health consequences. Economic and societal. That's what they focused on at Event 201. Okay. Held in partnership with the John Hopkins Center for Health Security. Why does that name ring a bell? Because all the results that the CDC were relying on, you know, death rates, you know, infection cases, all that kind of stuff, came from John Hopkins. So there's the connection. These folks are connected all the way through. Gates is connected all the way through. Dr. Fauci is connected all the way through. The CDC, NIH, you know, FDA, the grant funders, the emergency use authorizations, the, you know, the lying to President Trump, you know, the propaganda, the demonization of hydroxychloroquine. It's all there. It's all part of this pattern. Okay. It's all the same thing. All right. If you can't see that, call me. I'll explain it again. But if you take the last three shows, you know, 2 days ago plus this one, I think you're going to have an entire picture that's going to be staggering in terms of information. I'm going to send it off to One American News. We'll see if they want to report on what I'm reporting. All right. So held in partnership with the John Hopkins Health Center for Health Security and the World Economic Forum, this latest endeavor by Bill Gates is highly suspicious, to say the least, especially when considering that it was held just in time for the coronavirus outbreak. You know, it's too bad I can't post this article on Facebook because it would be immediately censored for being true. Right? Anyway, as is usually the case with Fishin's disease outbreaks that get media and academia talking about new vac- Oh, let me start again. As is usually the case with suspicious disease outbreaks that get the media and academia talking about new vaccines and public-private partnerships, in other words, money, right? Bill Gates' fingerprints are almost always hiding in the background. And this is exactly the case with coronaviruses, which could accomplish many of Gates' expectations for the future, including mass depopulation, mass vaccination, and mass consolidation of government power. That's what it's all about. Mass depopulation, mass vaccination, and mass consolidation of government power. All right? Hold on to that theme. Okay. We're going to move on here. Next article. There's a lot of this stuff. I think I might break up my articles with just a little bit of promo stuff so I don't go crazy. Be right back. This is Greg Penglis. So what is Action Radio? It is a radio show with its own citizen legislature. That's you, the listener. It is a fully interactive system of listeners, expert guests, social media, writing bills, legislator input, bill submission, lobbying, and citizen action. Action Radio is the future of talk radio using all the available technology in one completely integrated new system. Okay, let's move back up to present day, because a lot of things going on now that directly related to everything that happened, you know, a year ago. You know, they knew this was a hoax, pretty much. You know, they knew that this was a manufactured virus. They knew all kinds of things. They were immediately suppressed as part of the Event 201 media control. All right. They knew that hydroxychloroquine cured COVID, and they knew that there was no reason for a pandemic. In fact, there's no reason for a vaccine. Okay. So they knew all this stuff a year ago. All right. So because the scientists have been looking into this stuff, real scientists, you know, not government, you know, fascists like Dr. Fascist and the technocrats, real scientists looked into this and they knew all this stuff a year ago. All right. So if President Trump had just, you know, gone with some decent sources, you know, he would have immediately said, hey, hydroxychloroquine is the cure. There's no reason to panic. You know, we're going to distribute this, you know, drug, which will cure COVID for about $20. You know, we'll take care of it. And he could easily explain to the country that hydroxychloroquine breaks down the protein wall of a virus, and zinc sulfate, in other words, zinc, which is a mineral, all right, kills it. And then you have the zithromycin so you don't get pneumonia. That's basically the Zelenko protocol. It's really simple, all right? Hydroxychloroquine destroys the cell wall or the protein wall of a virus, all right? Zinc kills the virus and stops it from replicating, all right? Zithromycin keeps you from getting pneumonia. These are all proven drugs. They've been around for a while. Everybody knows they work. It literally is that simple. Okay, so let's get this other article I found. Back at the present day. This is from the website Tara, T-A-R-A. I only get two free more stories this month. Who? That's too bad. And so I found this article. Why did the WHO, that would be the World Health Organization, why did the WHO alter its definition of herd immunity? Now, this is one of the biggest, most misunderstood concepts out there, this whole idea of herd immunity. And I don't like the word herd. I don't think of myself as a herd. Okay. Basically, what it says is that people naturally become immune to a virus when they're exposed to it because we have immune systems. Some people, especially older folks, folks that are obese, diabetes, heart conditions, cancer, things like that, folks that are that have, you know, comorbidities, in other words, many things that can already kill them, all right, are very susceptible to viruses. A lot of people that die of the flu already have a bunch of other things wrong. Okay, so that's kind of how it works. They get opportunistic and they go, oh, this person's on the way out anyway. Yeah, there we go. All right. But the whole concept of herd immunity is another thing that disputes the need for a vaccine. Okay, because a vaccine is supposed to give you immunity. Well, if you've already got immunity, you don't need immunity given to you. All right. So if you already have herd immunity, in other words, if most of the population is already immune to this disease, which is proven by the fact that only, you know, 0.03%, in other words, 99.97% of the people are fine when exposed to this thing, all right? Not everybody gets the infection, but 99.97% of the population is just fine. 0.03% or 3 per 1,000 are not, okay? That's pretty good herd immunity, which they figure herd immunity of like 60% of the population, you know, really limits where a virus can go. So, and as herd immunity increases, as more and more people become immune to a virus, okay, the fewer people it can be transmitted to. So you don't need social distance when you already have immunity distance, all right? Let me make up a new term here, immunity distance. So in other words, if the virus cannot hop from person to person because all the people it's hopping to are already immune, then the virus is going to die. Viruses live by hopping from person to person and perpetuating themselves in that person, you know, until they kill that person and then they have to go find someone else. They're parasites, all right? So viruses are nasty little things. Why God created viruses, I don't know. I'm still working on why God created mosquitoes. That's another question. All right. So the article says herd immunity. Even non-science types have a vague idea of what it means. Most of us realize it refers to the protection from viral infections when a large percentage of the population obtains immunity to it. A large immune population helps prevent the spread of the virus. But how is that immunity achieved? This is from the article. Tara, December 23rd, 2020. So this was the end. This is just the end of last year. All right. And it figures into it because we're now in March of 2021. So, yeah, just a few months ago. All right. According to the World Health Organization, WHO, the methods to obtain herd immunity used to be found on this webpage. And you go to the article. It's on my Parler page at Greg. The page titled Coronavirus Disease, in parentheses, COVID-19, Serology, and dated 9th of June, 2020, can be found on Web Archive in the Wayback Machine. Okay, so in other words, they've taken this information off. Okay, this is what they used to say. All right. So according to the WHO, on June 9th, 2020, herd immunity was defined as the indirect protection from an infectious disease that happens when a population is immune either through vaccination, and here's the key part, or immunity developed through previous infection. So in other words, you got infected by something, you know, previously, and your body recognizes it as close enough to what you had before that it can modify your immune system to the new stuff. That's what happens with the flu virus every year. Every flu virus that comes to us each year is a new one. Okay, it's mutated. It's changed its form. But not everybody gets the flu. Why? Because your body goes, oh, I remember this from last year. It's not quite the same, but it's close enough. We can fight it. Okay? We need to, your body, immune system says we need to do something about that. Okay? I've never had a flu shot. I can't remember the last time I had the flu. I think it was a kid. What, 15, 16, something like that. Okay? I didn't have flu shots then either. I don't think they had them. But the point is that my body recognizes the new flu every year. Okay? And says, this looks familiar. Okay? And so I don't get the flu. All right. Now, I may someday. I don't know. You know, I'm not immune to this stuff completely. But so far my practice of not taking the flu shot has worked out very well. So not only do I not have the dangers of the flu shot, I don't have the dangers of the flu either because I've got a good immune system. So immunity developed through previous infection. That's the key to herd immunity. So enough people with enough exposure to a previous virus, in other words, SARS-CoV-1, for example, your body would recognize SARS-CoV-2 because they're like 78% the same DNA. So if your body goes, this looks different, but I've seen it before. Yeah, I can stop this one too. So that's why so many people are immune naturally to SARS-CoV-2 or the COVID-19 virus. All right. Now, anyway, so the article says an accurate and accepted definition, one that concurs with almost every other explanation on the internet and in every basic biology book I've ever seen. This is what the author says. Yeah, that's the definition, you know, through vaccination or immunity developed through previous infection. All right. Now, here's what happened. All right. Remember, all information has been changed around COVID. Articles have been changed. Information's changed and deleted. The Washington Times story with Bill Gertz, you know, saying last year it came from the Wuhan lab. All that stuff is gone. That's the beauty of the internet is access to information. The danger of the internet is when that information disappears. See, when you have a book, this is the beauty of books. Things don't disappear with a book. All right. The publisher doesn't come back and rip it out of your house because they don't know where they are. You don't register your books, fortunately. Though that may come someday. But this is why books don't change. So when they print it once, it's still there. That's why old dictionaries are so cool, because they show you what the words really mean, not the new latest, you know, foo-foo definition of what they mean. All right. Transgender is one that's changed a lot, too. So anyway, an accurate and accepted definition. Okay. Now compare this with the, this is back to the article. Now compare this with the explanation currently on the same page as of 13th November 2020. The WHO states that herd immunity is, are you ready? Let me get a drum roll, please. Oh, where's my drum roll? I'll do it later. The WHO now says, I wonder if I can do just, let me see. I wonder if I can play partially a theme. I'm going to play with something here for a little bit. The only time I get a chance to play with this stuff is when I'm live on the air. Sorry. All right. So let me see if I can do my I think I made guest of the day. And it's got a drum roll in the beginning. I wonder if I can just play part of it. Let's see what happens. If not, you get a bunch of music and I'll keep talking. And now, drum roll, please. The new definition for the WHO. Oh, I can't turn it off. Okay, that's good. Let's give it a round of applause, too. Yeah, see, I'm playing with my buttons. This is so much fun to do. A round of applause for the new WHO definition. Okay. The new definition of herd immunity is a concept used for vaccination in which a population can be protected from a certain virus if a threshold of vaccination is reached. You get the difference? Okay. It used to be natural immunity. Now, the only way to achieve immunity is with a vaccination. And the author asks, what happened to the other part? You know that part about herd immunity being developed through previous infection. Furthermore, the WHO states that herd immunity is achieved by protecting people from a virus, not by exposing them to it. Oh, really? Do you remember that thing I did the other day, March 11th of last year? This person that works for a Japanese you know, vaccine manufacturer, used to be U.S. government health official. Gee, revolving door. Yeah, okay. Said that everybody's going to get exposed. He gave a briefing to GOP members, and I'm not sure when they told the Democrats. Democrats probably already knew it, you know, because they're all Dr. Fascist fans, so I'm sure he told them. But everybody gets exposed to the virus. Everybody gets exposed to pretty much every virus. You know, you can't live in a hermit place, you know. So that's the thing. So your immune system takes care of it pretty much automatically. And so to think otherwise is just silly. Anyway, so the idea that if I herd immunity is fastest achieved when the most healthy people are exposed to the virus as quickly as possible. So the fastest way to get over a disease, all right, is to expose the healthy people to it as quickly as possible. So the 99.97% of the population that was not going to be seriously affected by this, they should have just left everybody alone. They should have had it run its course. Like a couple of advisors said to Trump, the ones he didn't believe, and he should have. He should have just let this thing run its course. The healthy people get exposed. You know, herd immunity is built up really quickly because your body says, this looks familiar to SARS-CoV-1 and develops immunity to it. The virus has nowhere to go because every person that a virus leaps to already has immunity. The virus dies. It's done in 8 weeks. End of story. For those that get sick, hydroxychloroquine, zinc sulfate, and azithromycin will take care of them. End of story. It's done. You know? And no need for a vaccine. See, that didn't work, though, because the vaccine came first and they had to sell it, okay? So they had to go through all this other nonsense in order to scare you into taking the vaccine, which is working, apparently, because you're taking the vaccine. At least a lot of you are. So the WHO changed the definition. Now, why would the WHO do that? What's in it for them? Okay? This is going to be my next project, is establishing the WHO Chinese American Worldwide Vaccine Industry. Because it's massive. The WHO is in the vaccine business. All right. I don't know how. I'm not sure all the connections, but they are. Now, they are either making money directly off vaccine manufacture or they're being funded by countries that are making money directly off vaccine manufacture. That's why it was so critical, I think, for insurrectionist Biden to get back in the WHO as rapidly as possible. All right, because the WHO wants the money from our vaccines, or at least they want the contributions to the WHO, you know, from all these folks that are making money off vaccines. All right. So in other words, here's how it works. The WHO gets out there and says, hey, everybody needs a vaccine. The only way to get herd immunity is if you have a vaccine, because they've changed the definition of herd immunity. All right. China, who makes a ton of vaccines, you know, and us and all these other folks, you know, said, okay, well, if herd immunity is only achieved with a vaccine, here's the vaccine, even though it's not a vaccine, all right? So everybody makes money. So the WHO makes money because they open the market. The folks that make the vaccine make money, all right, because the WHO opened the market for them. So then they now owe the WHO for opening the market for them. See how this all works? It's one big kickback. So the World Vaccine Conglomerate Industry Cabal, it's sort of like OPEC. We need a name for this. I think of a name for that now. What would you call the vaccine, I'll think of something, but it's going to end up being something like Vortex. Okay. I think the vaccine organization of technocrats, you know, educated, something. It'd be a great name for the worldwide vaccine cabal, Vortex. Let's see if I can fit it in. I'll make that up. All right. Huh. Again, where's the acknowledgement, this is back to the article, that herd immunity can be and has been established through previous infection? The WHO, back to the article, not only chooses to ignore one of the main methods of achieving herd immunity, it also asserts some deceitful claims, if not flat-out lies. For example, and I would go with the flat-out lies, by the way, all right? For example, from the article, vaccines train our immune systems to develop antibodies, just as might happen when we are exposed to a disease, but crucially, vaccines work without making us sick. Okay? I almost fell off my chair when I read that the first time. Vaccines work without making us sick? All right? We're going to get to the list of all the people that have been made sick by this. All right? So this is going to be quite a collection of stuff. Yeah. So this is the WHO's now saying that. Hey, vaccines don't make you sick. They're safe and effective. Have you noticed every time you put the word vaccine in a Facebook post, this little COVID warning comes up? Vaccines have been proven to be safe and effective. You know, they're approved by the FDA. They're not friggin' approved by the FDA. They're authorized under an emergency use authorization by the FDA under a declaration of emergency, but they are not approved and couldn't be approved for another 10 years. That's in previous shows, the last couple of days. Go back, you know, listen. You'll catch up. Back to the article. Really? After I read vaccines work without making you sick, author says, really? If you don't personally know someone who has gotten sick from a vaccine or have seen the headlines of negative reactions from the experimental COVID-19 vaccine, check out all the possible negative side effects listed in the inserts of all vaccines. Okay. Ooh, let's look that one up. That sounds good. So yeah, every vaccine has an insert. Let's see what we get here. Let's look this up. This is live radio. I don't mind. Oh, Immunization Action Coalition. Oh, look at all these. Information about vaccines and diseases they prevent. Okay, well, I'll have to take a look at this sometime. And I can do it right now. Let's go back to my article. This is much more fun. The WHO also says vaccinated people are protected from getting the disease in question. Oh, really? Wait, where's my article? Guys, leave my article alone. It's resetting. Let me get back to my place where I was. All right, here we go. Vaccinated people are protected from getting the disease in question. Well, we know that's not true. People can get COVID even though they're vaccinated for COVID. Why else would they make you wear masks and social distance? If those worked, you wouldn't need the vaccine. See, it all reinforces itself. Oh, it all comes back to you have to take the vaccine. You got to buy the vaccine. All right, that's how it goes, right? So back to the article. Vaccinated people are protected from getting the disease in question. That's what the WHO says. And the author says that's not always true. The makers of experimental COVID-19 vaccines have stated it is unknown if the vaccine prevents transmission of the virus. Wait a minute. Huh? Back up a second. The makers of the experimental COVID-19 vaccines have stated it is unknown if the vaccine prevents transmission of the virus. Isn't that fascinating? Well, so why are we taking it then? Okay, if you're not taking it to keep yourself sick, to keep yourself healthy and keep everybody else healthy, why are we taking it? Also, the author says vaccinated people can get sick regardless of vaccinations with any vaccine. Oh, isn't that interesting? Why would the WHO, back to the article, change the definition of herd immunity to completely ignore the other major half of it? Well, the author says, other than pushing the narrative that the experimental COVID vaccine is the only way to save humankind from the coronavirus, which of course raises an entirely new set of additional questions, which I tend to do on the show. I think I read that rather badly. Let me try this last paragraph again. Why would the WHO change the definition of herd immunity to completely ignore the other major half of it? Well, other than pushing the narrative that the experimental COVID-19 vaccine is the only way to save humankind from the coronavirus, which of course raises an entirely new set of additional questions. Okay, it's not the only way to save humankind from the coronavirus, but that's what they're saying it is. All right, let's moving on here. Okay, this I'll do kind of quickly. This is a big article, but I'm going to do it kind of quickly. World Health Organization, actually going to use one of their own documents, all right? This is from 2014. Isn't this interesting? 2014, okay? So we're Obama administration, you know, a couple of years before the 2016 election. China enters global vaccine market. Surprise, surprise. All right. Listen to this. China is gearing up to supply the world with affordable vaccines that fulfill all efficacy, safety, and quality requirements. This is from Jane Perry reporting to the WHO, okay, the World Health Organization. This is their own document. The global vaccine industry has long been dominated by a few multinational companies. Well, we can't have that. But now that companies in China, India, and other emerging economies are becoming major vaccine manufacturers and have started selling these vaccines on the international market, competition is set to increase and prices to come down. Shit, right. For Zheng Qingzhen, representative for PATH's China programs, the growth of China's vaccine industry is, quote, a very positive development for global health. Chinese health, Chinese Communist Party health, anyway, as governments and international procurement agencies will be able to afford more life-saving vaccines and thus protect more lives. Oh, really? This is from the people who want to depopulate the world. Okay, so China's been in this business for a long time. So it makes sense that China would help develop the coronavirus and also help, and that way they can sell, you know, vaccines to combat the virus that they created in their own lab with American money, gain of function, with all the other stuff we've been talking about. So just to let you know, China's into this, in this up to their ass, and I bet there's a connection. We're going to look into the world financing, the world operation, the vortex, the vaccine, you know, organization, as I said before. Jessie's on the line, so I'm going to bring her on right now and see if you've been enjoying my hour and 15 minutes so far of monologue. Jessie, welcome back to our – isn't this amazing?
It's good. Good information, Greg.
Well, thank you.
Yeah, this thing, I'm telling you, people go, I just got it. I just got the second one. I said, really?
Oh,
and,
good for you. Yeah,
one
sorry.
Of the ladies in my Sunday school class, she's having a lot of bad headaches, like very severe headache, and she sees like little black stars, like, you know, when you get dizzy, you know. And a lot of people are dying, but they're not telling us. But this is not really a vaccine, and we all know it. I don't
well,
see
we
people
all know
being
it.
Deceived and lying. We know you, it. You're right.
But the
we
people that are
it.
Taking it don't know it. They believe Dr. Fauci. They believe the science. You, even President Trump.
And you,
idiot.
And you know, Greg?
Yeah.
Well, they lied to him, and he believed it, I guess. But you know, Greg, there was a report, and I don't know where it is, but I seen it, that they were making a lot of fake vaccine in China, and they were selling it in the black market secretly. So it's hidden. The United States. So, I mean, I'd rather take a fake vaccine than what Bill Gates is created with Fauci, of course, you know. But I don't know what's in it. But they say it was going to hit the market in the United States. About 1 million vaccine were coming in, sold in the black market in China.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you have no idea what's in your vaccine. And there's another person I just have. It's on my website. There's another doctor who's saying that the reason that they have to keep this at such a ridiculously cold temperature is that the messenger RNA coded strands break up if it gets hot. They're amazingly temperature sensitive. So how do you know that the virus you're getting or the vaccine you're getting hasn't been warmed up? Hasn't been, you know, are they checking it before? Are they doing samples before they inject people? No, you have no idea. If they have a power failure, right, overnight, and the fridge, you know, drops below the required 90 degrees below zero, whatever ridiculously cold temperature it is, right? Now, why would you inject somebody with something 90 degrees below zero? If the virus is that sensitive, if the messenger RNA is that sensitive to temperature, what's going to happen when it hits your body at 98.7 degrees or 98.6?
Yeah.
Could it break up as soon as it gets in your body? I mean, if it has to be that cold to get it to you, what's going to happen here? Did they test for that? I don't know.
That's ridiculous. No, we're guinea pigs. The people are guinea pigs. They're just, they don't know what's going to happen in 6 months after they take the vaccine. And, you know, one of the ladies that I danced with, Filipinos, she goes, I just got the vaccine. I'm so excited. I said, really?
I'm sorry.
And, you know, she's a Trump supporter. And I'm going, why did you take it? Don't you know they're lying? She says, well, everybody was doing it at work, and I work with a lot of little kids at the base, blah, blah, blah. I know everybody's taking it.
Reason.
I said, really? Yeah, it's so stupid because everybody's taking it where she worked.
Yeah.
I'm like, did they demand that you take it? She said, well, no, but they kind of hinted that I work with a lot of kids. I said, do you know kids don't get the COVID? Very rare, maybe one or two in the country, and she didn't know what to say about that.
No,
but,
send on my shows, the last couple of shows. Yeah. Listen, I got to Jimmy Smith on the line right now, who's going to tell us a little bit about what happened with their event last Thursday. Let me bring Jimmy on. So you're welcome to stay on the line. I'm not done with this, because the key to all of this is the fact that the vaccine companies are immune from liability, and I have to include that. In this total puzzle, which really makes you understand what's going on with the World Vaccine Cabal. So you can stick around. Hang on. I got to
I'll
Jimmy. I'm going to give Jimmy
Okay.
Yeah, that sounds good. Jimmy, I want to bring you on. Jimmy's from Concerned Veterans of America. I want to bring you on so you're not on a hold for a long time. But I want to do an abbreviated report this week. Tell me about what happened. Unless you want to comment on some of the stuff I've been talking about so far. I don't know if you've been following my series on which came first, you know, the virus or the vaccine. But I've got a lot of information for you and for Concerned Veterans of America. So welcome to the show, sir, and tell us about what happened.
Well, thank you, Greg. And, yeah, it's one of those things where the vaccine and all those issues is not the priority right now for CVA because we currently have healthcare issues with veterans getting their appointments. And that, to us right now, is truly something we've historically been working on. But to the point of the question was, how was the event? So for those who don't know, we did an event with Mike Cotton and his partner who produced a documentary And these two produced what's called Back to China Beach, a documentary on China Beach, which was an R&R location in Vietnam. And they interviewed individuals and went back to the actual China Beach location, and they talked about it. And it was all about hope and healing and connecting the stories of how that R&R place during the time of war and soldiers, sailors, and airmen and Marines seeing the worst of possible things, it allowed them to go and well, separate themselves from that harsh reality and recover and heal, even in a war zone. And the documentary also does a great job of, you know, not only detailing the healing part, but basically how it came about. And, you know, what a lot of people don't understand is that whenever we have servicemen and women who have to do things that are just outside the norm, you know, to go out and destroy or kill the enemy and things like that, is not human nature. Matter of fact, it's counter to human nature. And for that, it really does affect the human psyche. And this movie really does talk about that factor. They had people come on and talk about not only, of course, surfing great waves, but camaraderie ship. Talk about the aspect of they, you know, they could talk to people about what was going on, or they could just go there and quietly enjoy being left alone and separate themselves from the horrors of war. So it was an incredible documentary. It was very well received. We had, I think, and of course, with COVID protocols and restrictions, we were limited how many we could see. And I think we had about 70-plus people in the theater. And the reason we did this movie, though, was is because the war in Afghanistan has now surpassed the war in Vietnam as the longest war in history for the United States. So we felt that that story of the Vietnam veterans directly correlates to the, well, the story of Afghanistan veterans, where we have, you know, servicemen and women who were basically disrespected, to where now you're seeing veterans who are over in Afghanistan. It's not the forgotten war, but they just kind of forgotten the soldiers and sailors and Marines who were going there, because we're no longer seeing standing ovations or people giving up their priority seating on airplanes and things like that. So this was also a way for us to bring that message to current date with the current war. As a matter of fact, we had a whole bunch of people text and reach out to their congressional leaders to tell them that it's time to end the endless war. So this was fantastic in the fact that it helped demonstrate a documentary that is for hope and healing. It correlated it to today's war, and it gave the ability to have the viewers reach out to our leaders at the state and national level, and even the president, and send them a message to end the endless war.
Wow. This question I've been meaning to ask you in the last couple of weeks we've been on, the China Beach, is that the same one that the TV show was based on with Dana Delaney, or is that a different, totally different thing?
Absolutely. That is the exact one. As a matter of fact, some of the ones who were in the documentary had been advisors for the TV show, because they, of course, it's always hard for Hollywood to get it right. But, you know, it was very good because they were able to get people who were really there.
Hmm. Did that go a long way to removing or diminishing PTSD in soldiers when they came back?
Well, so one of the things is that for them to build that relationship really did. It really helped decompress while you were there. Imagine those poor individuals that had no out at all, none whatsoever. And, you know, it's one of the things that people don't understand. This is a emotional and a mental health issue that affects servicemen and women, because you're asking them to do something that, again, it's counter to what is normal for anybody to do, is to go out and create violence against somebody else. So, the documentary really did relate to that.
Yeah. Here's a question for you. I've wondered if a lot of people have a totally wrong idea of what war is like. And when I do my Memorial Day specials or Veterans Day specials, a lot of times I'll read poetry from soldiers in combat. And the sort of disconnect between what they thought about going in and what war actually is like is huge. And I'm wondering, you know, from the charge of the Light Brigade into the Valley of Death rode the 600. Bravely, they gave up their lives. What a bunch of nonsense. That's horrible. Do you think the military and veterans would be better served if a really realistic view of combat was given to people that are actually going to be engaged in combat before they sign up? Is there a way to tell you, this is what you might face? This is what war looks like. You've got enough video. I've got enough things now to do that and say, we don't expect you to not be emotional and not react to this, but we just want to let you know ahead of time, this is the potential. If you are sent into war, this is what it looks like. Has anybody ever done that, you know, to recruits?
Well, one of the things is when I came in as a private, I had senior NCOs that, well, actually all the way down to junior NCOs and leaders that had been over in Vietnam. Because I went in 1983, and of course, you know, the war ended in 75.
Yeah.
Right. So, well, I came in with a lot of people who had served in Vietnam, and they would sit around and tell us about, well, when this happens, you know, and it sounded like, you know, bravado stories, but really they were sharing their life experiences. So as I grew in the military, one of the things I always tried to do was relate to the servicemen that I was with, because it was infantry at that time, was all male, the servicemen I was with, the factors of whenever this happens, you're going to have to face this problem. But, and then I would go into, we have casualty collection points where your medic is here and they're able to treat this. The guy to your left and right is able to do X, Y, and Z to help save your life. And and that is really important. And what the end result, just from me taking the knowledge shared from my peers and my supervisors, the Vietnam vets of the day, and transferring that knowledge. When we first went into Afghanistan, a unit called the 10th Mountain went. Now, by this time, I was already pretty much close to retirement and done with the military career. So this unit, separate of me, goes over to Afghanistan, and one platoon gets deployed onto a mountaintop, and they just get the crap mortared out of them to where, like, I think there's almost just short of 30 people there, so 20-plus people there, and like 22 out of those 20-plus got wounded. And three of my people just happened to, who I previously been in leadership position over, had went over there, and they were wounded. But this all ties back into the realities of, we know the tragedies of war, we know the effects on human nature, and we need to share that experience with the next generations to make sure they're prepared. But more than anything, we also need to not put our servicemen and women in harm's way. So, like right now, they're over in Iraq, and periodically they have been shot at by whoever shot the missiles, wherever the resources came from. So we have servicemen and women who are deployed to Afghanistan, Syria, and Iraq. They're basically sitting ducks, because there's no real true strategic national reason to be in Afghanistan or to be in Iraq or to be in Syria, because we're not fixing their situation. We're just putting our troops in harm's way.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, they need to come out of there. And this is the most ridiculous situation I've ever seen. And I see posts on Facebook, hey, we're back to business as usual. We're bombing the Middle East again. You know, oil prices are up and all this other nonsense. The fact that you don't know where the missiles and bombs and rockets are coming from, the fact that there is nothing you can do, you're not going to nation building, you know, the whole idea of trying to, you know, make a democracy or change things, or, you know, these people are thousands of years old. All we are is targets. What I don't understand is why Trump didn't take them all out when he had the chance. You know, I don't know if he thought he was going to be reelected and he had more time. What happened? Go ahead.
Well, and I can't tell you why President Trump did not get over that threshold. I would suggest that there was not enough support within the entirety of Congress. So, you know, people are like, well, you know, I support President Trump, but I think we should keep the troops in Afghanistan. And there are people who are diehard conservative Republican congressmen and women in the state of Florida that opposed withdrawing the troops, under the impression that we need them there to deter terrorism here, when the reality is that terrorism is like water. You are just simply moving it around to a different place. And over the years, Iran has been putting hundreds of millions of dollars into terrorist organizations in Africa, a whole nother continent away. So we're spending billions of dollars in a small country that doesn't want us, why Iran is spending millions of dollars in countries that are looking for, you know, a membership in the terrorist organizations because they're, you know, they're economically deprived or whatever social problems are going there, they're able to recruit. So what we're doing is not very smart in policy. And what we need to do is repeal the 2001 authorization for use of military force, end the war in Afghanistan, and rebalance and refocus these authorization for use of military force, and then have reasonable and realistic international policies, and also only use the military as the last line failure of diplomacy. And it is too easy right now for them to just keep them over as diplomacy. So the congressmen and women need to understand, military is not the form of diplomacy. Military is when diplomacy fails.
And it's not for spending money on your military contractors in your district. It's not a vote getter. It's not a jobs program and a bunch of other things. Hey, listen, I got to let you go because I want to get back to this. But this is great. And we'll have more time next week to talk about these issues. But this is good. And now my last question before you go. Yeah. Is the video available anywhere? The China Beach video? Can people see it?
No, this is not yet on Netflix or anything like that, but it will be eventually. They're working on it, but we are looking forward to maybe doing this again in either Jacksonville or Tampa or other areas.
Let me know.
I want to say if anybody wants to truly support the effort to end the war and this almost 20-year-long effort in Afghanistan where there's no task, purpose, or mission, what they can do is simply text 46262 and the word, bring them home, all one word. So it's 46262, and text the word, bring them home. And they, of course, can find us at cb4a.org. That's CharlieVictor4aAlpha.org. And sign our petitions and see what we're all about.
Sounds good. And that is Concerned Veterans for America. It's a great group, and we're going to have them back next week. Thank you, Jimmy. Appreciate you calling us with more information. That was great.
All right, thanks. We'll talk to you then.
All right, sounds good. Wonderful. All right, so I'll be back next week, usually 8 o'clock. I want to get into this Newsweek article because the one thing that ties all of this this whole thing together, the one thing that makes it possible for these, quote, vaccine manufacturers to do what they do is the fact that they're not held liable for anything that their product does to you. So all the injuries, all the deaths, there's nothing you can do about it. There's no product in the world product line that has this kind of protection. Okay. So you have to ask yourself, if it's so safe, why are they immune from civil lawsuit? All right. So, the obvious answer is, of course, they're not. They're not that safe. And if they were, they wouldn't need the liability protection. So here's how it goes. And this is Newsweek asked this question. And it says, health, fact check. Are pharmaceutical companies immune from COVID-19 vaccine lawsuits? And this is Shana Green on this is January 19th of this year, 2021. So as of January 19th, about 24 million cases of coronavirus have been reported in the United States, and more than 400,000 Americans have died. Yeah, okay. I don't trust those. Those are CDC figures. Yada, 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 yada. The Center for Disease Control and Prevention data tracker shows that 10.5 million people have received at least one vaccine dose and that 1.6 million have received both doses. Interesting. Okay. According to the Associated Press, massive coronavirus vaccine trials involving tens of thousands of participants have so far surfaced no signs of serious side effects and few unexpected adverse reactions have been reported in the early days of the COVID-19 vaccine distribution in the U.S. Okay. I'm going to read something from some other sources that tend to dispute that. So this is the propaganda line. This is the liberal line. This is the media line. This is the pro-globalist line. Okay, so now let's get to the actual let's get to the thing here. It says that though millions of people have been vaccinated, some Americans are concerned about the side effects of the vaccines and if pharmaceutical companies such as Moderna and Pfizer could be liable for their injuries. And here's a tweet from Rob G Media. I'm not sure who that is. Anyway, it says pharmaceutical companies have no liability for their vaccine products. I ask, if they are so safe, why can you not seek damages in a court of law if you are harmed by them? There's a special, quote, vaccine court that they have, but it may as well be a kangaroo court. So here we go. January 13th, Governor Mike DeWine of Ohio, a Republican in name only, posted a tweet reassuring the public that the COVID-19 vaccines are safe. Well, how the hell does he know? Is he a scientist? Has he done research? No, he just said they're safe because it's the government line. All right. So he says one poster replied to DeWine claiming that pharmaceutical companies have no liability for the vaccine products. I asked, you know, okay, and anyway, we all saw that. So here are the facts. Now, this is the key to what I'm going to be working on next. This is according to 42 U.S. Code, Section 300AA-22, quote, no vaccine manufacturer shall be liable in a civil action for damages arising from a vaccine-related injury or death associated with the administration of a vaccine after October 1st, 1988, if the injury or death resulted from side effects that were unavoidable, even though the vaccine was properly prepared and was accompanied by proper directions and warnings. Let me try that one again. All right. So here's the thing. Guess what I'm going to do? I'm going to rewrite Section 42 Code, 42, Title 42 U.S. Code, Section 300AA-22. See, the reason I love this article is that Newsweek brought me directly to the place where I'm going to write the amendment. And the amendment's going to be very simple. Vaccine manufacturers shall be fully liable in a civil action for damages arising from a vaccine-related injury or death associated with the administration of any vaccine. There's my bill. Wasn't that easy? Josie, I hope you like that. All right, that's for you too. Yeah, that's it.
Yeah.
That's all you have to – see how simple that would be? All I have to do is go into the law, write a bill, and that's it. I'm going to explain the background. I'll do some things like that. But all we have to do is change 42 U.S. Code, Section 300AA-22. Hope you all get that. All right, listen, we do podcasts. And change from no vaccine manufacturer shall be liable to vaccine manufacturers shall be liable in any civil action for damages arising from a vaccine-related injury or death associated with the administration of a vaccine, period. That's all you need. Delete everything else.
Mm-hmm.
But that's how simple it is to change the law. People understand that. And that would have a profound impact on everything. That would make vaccine manufacturers completely liable for what they're doing, like every other product. Aspirin is liable.
And
your toys are liable.
And you know, Greg, they're making, before you get the vaccine, you have to sign this paper that if anything happens to you, they're not responsible, because my mom's cousin that just died from the vaccine.
Oh, I'm sorry.
The Pfizer. There's nothing they can do for an hour after she had the vaccine.
Yeah.
So she's dead. There's nothing the family can do because they signed a release that we're not going to be responsible.
But why would they need a release? Why would they need a release if it says here in law that the vaccine manufacturers aren't responsible anyway? Yeah, I don't know. I mean, is that like double insurance? In other words, they know they might be liable. Well, here's the part. Here's the catch I don't understand. It says if
they
the
know
injury or,
that many people will die.
Well, of course they know.
That's why.
They don't care about that. They just want to sell vaccines. I mean, this is how cynical these people are. All right? But here's the part I don't get. It says if the injury or death resulted from side effects that were unavoidable, why is it the side effects are unavoidable? Even though the vaccine was properly prepared and was accompanied, in other words, I guess it didn't warm up, right? And was accompanied by proper directions and warnings. Huh.
Mm-hmm.
See, I don't understand that part.
Well,
what do they mean by unavoidable?
Greg,
so in other words, they're
Greg,
not liable?
What I tell people is this. Just think about it. I've been getting vaccines, you know, when we were kids and all that.
Right.
Have you ever heard of any vaccine that has to be in a cool place like this? And have you ever had two vaccines?
Well, they have booster shots. The hepatitis B. The hepatitis B was a they had two shots for the hepatitis B thing. Several years ago. I remember that.
I didn't know about that one.
Yeah, that's okay. Anyway, here's where it gets more interesting. And this is Newsweek, which is what I find so fascinating. So Newsweek did a fact check. And so that's what the FDA law says. The injury or death resulted from side effects that were unavoidable, even though the vaccine was properly prepared and was accompanied by proper directions and warnings. Well, how do you know it was properly prepared? And how do you know anybody actually read the directions and warnings? You don't know. Okay. So the author says, the Newsweek article, in other words, companies that manufacture vaccines are not liable if someone has an allergic reaction or injury after being vaccinated. And that doesn't, and there might be more than that too. They could have any reaction. It doesn't have to be allergic. What if you're having a reaction because stuff is unsafe? You know, so all these things are not taking into account. However, I'm going to get to Bianca. He's on the line. I'll get to you in just a minute. It says, however, and this is back to the Newsweek article, individuals can file a petition with National Vaccine Injury Compensation Program, the VICP, administered by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, the same people that brought you the vaccines in the first place, you know, to receive compensation if they are found to have been injured by one of the vaccines covered by the VICP, according to the Health Resources and Services Administration under Health and Human Services. Quote, even in cases in which such a finding is not made, petitioners may receive compensation through a settlement. In other words, they're going to pay you to shut you the hell up. Okay. VICP, also known as Vaccine Court, unquote, has been accepting petitions, also known as claims, since 1988, and has paid about, are you ready for this, $4.4 billion, with a B, $4.4 billion in overall compensation, according to CNBC. Though VICP covers vaccines for diseases including human papillomavirus, HPV, measles, mumps, polio, and seasonal influenza, the flu shot, it does not cover any COVID-19 vaccines. Wait a minute. Okay, so Vaccine Court doesn't cover any COVID-19 vaccines. So not only are they not liable for what they're doing, you can't go to Vaccine Court even if they do something. So they're double protected. Isn't that amazing? Let me get to Bianchi. This is staggering information. That's from Newsweek, too. All right, let's bring it up. Frankie, are you enjoying my dissertation here for the past few days?
Yeah, it's very interesting. Of course, I knew that the vaccine companies have the immunity,
mm-hmm.
whereas in other areas, people don't want the police to have that immunity. So that's
different,
what you have.
Immunity, but I know what you're talking about, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. It's a different immunity, but... if you get sick from the vaccine, you have no recourse, a tort in the courts.
Yeah, no kidding. This is actually a really good article for Newsweek. I'm kind of surprised, but I must give credit where credit is due. Anyway, back to the article. In 2005, the Public Readiness and Emergency Preparedness Act, PREP, was created to protect from liability pharmaceutical companies that make or distribute vaccines unless there is, quote, willful misconduct by the company. Well, how the hell do you prove that? Oh, we just tried to make them safe. We didn't know they were going to fall apart in your body. We didn't know. This wasn't willful. How do you prove willful? You can't. HHS Secretary Alex Azar, who's also a former, you know, biggie in the pharmaceutical companies and probably will head back there, invoked PrEP in February in response to the pandemic, declaring COVID-19 to be, quote, a public health emergency warranting liability protections for covered countermeasures. So in other words, and I think what they're saying here, these vaccines are not FDA approved because they're brought in under a declaration of emergency because they are authorized. They're not approved. They're authorized under this declaration of emergency and emergency use authorization. They need even more protection from liability. They're doubly protected because not only can you can't even go to vaccine court with these things because they're not FDA approved. All right. They're only emergency use authorization. So not only you can't sue them under the regular system, you know, because they have liability, you can't sue them under COVID because they have emergency use authorization, extra liability protection. They can't lose. That's like gambling when you can't lose any money and you just keep the winnings. Not a bad deal, huh? So they can throw as much money into this as they want. They can market them as much as they want. They can give them to as many people as they want. And there's not a damn thing you can do about it if something goes wrong.
Hmm. Well, if people take the vaccine and the next morning they grow a big unicorn off the top of their head, nothing they can do about it but polish it.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. The article says this means that companies like Moderna and Pfizer are protected from lawsuits regarding their COVID-19 vaccines until 2024. I guess that's when the emergency declaration runs out. According to CNBC, another liberal TV show, you also can't sue the Food and Drug Administration for authorizing a vaccine for emergency use, nor can you hold your employer accountable if they mandate inoculation as a condition of employment. Let me try that again. You also can't sue. Pianchi, you left. Come on back. Call back. We're not done yet. Sorry. According to CNBC, you also can't sue the Food and Drug Administration for authorizing a vaccine for emergency use, nor can you hold your employer accountable if they mandate inoculation as a condition of employment. However, the PREP Act also created the Countermeasures Injury Compensation Program, the CICP, which provides benefits to people who claim that they suffer injuries from vaccines under emergency authorization. It goes on to say that, read the article. There's more differences and more things like that. But that's the kind of stuff you want to look into here. All right, I wanted to do a couple more things. We've got about 15 minutes left. So, I'm going to do more discussion here in just a minute. This is like one more thing I wanted to cover today. Here we go. Two articles, and then we're going to open it up again. Health Impact News. All right. So if you want to know how safe these vaccines are, let me tell you about the people that are reporting problems. Health Impact News. This is a source that is routinely banned on Facebook. This one's titled from March 9th, but they have a bunch of different articles. So March 9th, the Australian Federal Health Minister, Greg Hunt, was hospitalized after receiving the experimental COVID vaccine. This is from the editor of Health Impact News, Brian Shillevy. I want him on. I want this guy on the show. He says, Australian Federal Health Minister Greg Hunt has been admitted to a hospital just after receiving the AstraZeneca experimental COVID vaccine. ABC Australia mentioned twice in their coverage that Mr. Hunt's condition is, quote, not believed to be related to the vaccine. Of course not. Let me see what else we've got. They have another section here. Doctors around the world issue dire warning. Do not get the COVID vaccine. And there's nine of them there, so feel free to take a look. More headlines. Teacher dies hours after getting AstraZeneca COVID shot in Italy. Manslaughter investigation launched. That's today's news. Okay. Italian music teacher dead hours after COVID shot. Here's another one. Pediatric nurse brags about getting COVID vaccine while pregnant. Baby is stillborn 8 days later. Another headline, boxing champion Marvin Hagler dead at age 66 after receiving an experimental COVID vaccine. Another one, CDC headline here, 1,524 people dead, 31,079 injured following experimental COVID mRNA vaccines. Next headline, 508 dead, 297,274 reported injuries following COVID-19 experimental vaccines reported in the UK. Next headline, 39-year-old surgical technician and mother dies 4 days after second experimental Moderna COVID mRNA shot. UK government changes recommendations on pregnant women getting experimental COVID injections, causing at least 20 miscarriages so far. Next headline, first week of COVID experimental vaccines in South Korea, 7 dead and more than 2,800 injured. Next headline, whistleblower reveals many pregnancy complications following experimental COVID injections, vaccine leaving a trail of devastated mothers. Next headline, 12 residents die after first COVID vaccine in Wales, nursing and dementia care center. Yeah, big surprise. Next headline, death rates skyrocket in Israel following Pfizer experimental COVID vaccines. Next headline, 28-year-old PhD physical therapist dead 2 days after being injected with COVID's experimental mRNA vaccine. I could go on. There's more of these. There's a bunch more of these, but you get the idea. Okay. So, and this is all in Health Impact News, and nobody's talking about this. All right. Let me give you one more here. Probably the last article I want to talk about for now. And then Josie and I, we're going to have a little chat here. We got two more articles. I'm sorry. Let me put this one back for lungs and tell you even more bad news. All right. That's not the one I want. Where's the one? Here we go. This is in Defender, Children's Health Defense News and Views. You want to get Children's Health Defense. It's a fascinating website. So health impact, vaccine impacts, natural news, the Children's Health Defense. These are all great organizations, and they're all, of course, banned on Facebook. All right. This is from March 16th. 20-plus countries suspend use of AstraZeneca vaccine, but regulators insist benefits outweigh risks. Sure. WHO and the EMA, I'm not sure who they are investigating reports of blood clot-related injuries and deaths after the AstraZeneca COVID vaccine. But both say there's no reason to stop using the vaccines. Let me contradict that. Yes, there is. Article, more than 20 countries have either suspended or said they will delay Oxford AstraZeneca vaccinations based on reports of deaths or injuries, in most cases related to blood clots in healthy people who received the vaccine. Well, there's a contradiction right there. Why are healthy people receiving the vaccine? Healthy people, by definition, have a good immune system. People who have a good immune system, by definition, can ward off infections and viruses. People who can ward off infections and viruses don't need a vaccine. And yet they're getting it to healthy people. Prosecutors in northern Italy announced Monday they had seized a batch of 393,600 shots of the AstraZeneca COVID vaccine following the death of a 57-year-old man hours after he was vaccinated. And that's from Reuters. Meanwhile, back at the WHO, the World Health Organization, who is standing firm in its support of the vaccine, in a press conference today, WHO Director General Tedros Adhanom Ghebreyesus said, "This does not necessarily mean these events, deaths and injuries, are linked to the vaccine, but it's routine practice to investigate them, and it shows that the surveillance system works and effective controls are in place." What effective controls do you think he's talking about? The effective control is to have your nation stop giving this thing. All right. Now, as I just mentioned, China and the WHO are in the vaccine business. I'm not sure how the financial world is connected, but the WHO changed the definition of herd immunity to say that it only comes from vaccines. All right. So the WHO's position is the only way out of this COVID, you know, created thing is with vaccines. Okay, so now you know who's behind all this. Now you know what's going on. Now you know what's happening here. Regulators in Europe are also defended the vaccine, telling news outlets that the benefits outweigh the risks. Isn't it fascinating? All right, I don't know if you've noticed the pattern here. It's always the government doctors, the government employees, the government scientists that are pushing this stuff. The government climate people tell you we're going to die in 12 years. Real climate scientists say, no, it's nonsense. The sun's going through a cooling period. Okay, so governments are vested in industry. There's a government industry cooperation. That's usually known as fascism, by the way. All right, when government and industry cooperate so closely that they run society themselves, you know, the technocrats, the whole bit. Dr. Fascist is a technocrat. You know, that's why I call him Dr. Fascist. He really defines fascism. Jesse, we've got about 8 minutes left. Anything you want to comment here? There's only one more thing I could possibly cover today, and then we'll pick up more probably tomorrow.
No, I'm just listening to you.
Okay. Well, thank you.
Go ahead.
Well, and this is the reason I'm doing this, so much information in these three shows, is that you can then share these three shows, and people can go, oh, I had no idea. And after that, they will have an idea. National File, inventor of the PCR test, said Fauci doesn't know anything and is willing to lie on television. And this is March 15th by Patrick Howley in National File, another one of my favorite sources. This is the guy that invented the PCR test. By the way, the PCR test, all right, was never supposed to be used to detect viruses because it doesn't do that. All right. So the one test that everybody is using, the CDC uses and mandates for the testing of a virus, was specifically designed not to test for viruses. I don't know if you picked up on that little tidbit of information, but it's out there. Carrie Mullis, who won the 1993, this is the article, Nobel Prize for inventing the polymerase chain reaction, or the PCR testing process, later used to diagnose coronavirus cases, said that Dr. Anthony Fauci lacks knowledge of medicine and is willing to lie on television. Mullis also admitted in another set of videotape remarks that a PCR test doesn't tell you that you're sick. Dr. Anthony Fauci Carrie Mullis stated in a resurfaced video interview, quote, "Guys like Fauci get up there and start talking. You know, he doesn't know anything really about anything. And I say that to his face. Nothing. The man thinks you can take a blood sample and stick it in an electron microscope. And if it's got a virus in there, he'll know it. He doesn't understand electron microscopy, and he doesn't understand medicine, and he should not be in a position like he's in. Most of those guys up there at the top are just total administrative people, and they don't know anything about what's going on in the body. You know, those guys have got an agenda, which is not what we would like them to have, being that we pay them to take care of our health in some way. They've got a personal kind of agenda." Yeah, we know what it is. It's money. I've been over that the last few days. Back to the quotes. "They make up their own rules as they go. They change them when they want to. And they smugly, like Tony Fauci, does not mind going on television in front of the people who pay his salary and lie directly into the camera." So there's a quote for you. So there's someone who knows Dr. Fascist who has the same opinion of him that we do. And the reason I have that opinion is because people like Carrie Mullis. So the guy that invents the PCR test, again, that everybody's using, says, it's not designed to test for viruses. That's not what I designed it for. It's a let's see if I can figure this out just from my own, you know, medical knowledge here. Polymerase chain reaction. Well, poly means many. Merase, it's probably like, I'm not sure what it is. I'll look it up. We'll find that on another day. Get about 5 minutes left here. So here we go. It says, in an obscure video resurfaced during the coronavirus meltdown, Mullis said that, quote, "With PCR, if you do it well, you can find almost anything in anybody. It starts making you believe in the sort of Buddhist notion that everything is contained in everything else." He says, because if you can amplify one single molecule up to something that you can really measure, which PCR can do, then there's just very few molecules that you don't have at least one single one of in your body. He says PCR is separate from that. It's just a process that's used to make a whole lot of something out of something. I'm not sure what that means. He says that's what it is. It doesn't tell you that you're sick, and it doesn't tell you that the thing you ended up with really was going to hurt you or anything like that. Well, I'm curious what the test was for. But we know what it's not for. It's not for what it's being used for. The CDC illegally inflated the COVID fatality number by at least 1,600% as the 2020 presidential election played out. We know that. We went over that with one of my researchers, you know, starting in July of last year, how they started cooking the books, how they went to cases and infections over death rate, how the deaths increased miraculously to huge numbers, how this thing was going to end in July. We talked about it. I showed stats. I've still got parts from July of last year, unless they've erased them, which they might very well have. So think about that, 1,600%. That means for every 100 people that actually died, they said 1,600 people died. No, I'm sorry. For every one person that died, they said 1,600 people died. It's even worse than that. All right? So for every 1,600 people that died, it was like, you know, 1.6 million. So you can see that the numbers are meaningless after July of last year. They're completely meaningless, all right? Anyway, she says, according to a study published by the Public Health Initiative of the Institute for Pure and Applied Knowledge, the study, quote, COVID-19 Data Collection, Comorbidity and Federal Law, a Historical Retrospective, authored by Henry Ely. All right, that's it. So that was the source of this, that the COVID numbers were increased by at least 1,600% illegally. Article goes on. The CDC is now legally requiring red-blooded Americans to wear face masks on all public transportation as globalists try to push the concept of, quote, double masking onto the populace. Since the election, the World Health Organization, the WHO, admits that PCR tests are not totally reliable on the first try, and a second test might be needed. In other words, they suck. This corresponds with CDC's quiet admission that it blended viral and antibody test results for its case numbers and that people can test positive on an antibody test if they have antibodies from a family of viruses that cause the common cold. In other words, they're saying you have coronavirus if you have a cold, if you have anything even remotely related to the SARS-CoV-2 virus. And the way to do this, and I read this from another source, they take your sample and they amplify it 40 times greater. So they're looking for 40 times the viral load, if you will, of what's actually in your body. And when they amplify, when they magnify their test sample by 40 times, this guy says you can find anything. Everybody's got all kinds of viruses, you know, thousands, probably tens of thousands of viruses in your body. And all they need is one molecule to go, oh, there's COVID. Positive.
Hey, Greg, yeah. So that the flu doesn't exist anymore and a minor cold doesn't exist because it's all COVID now.
Well, that's what they're saying, yeah. And this is why those numbers disappeared. Because they're listing everything as COVID and they're using, you know, basically cold viruses to do it. This is a fascinating report. Of course, it's on Parler. You won't find this on Facebook. You got to go to my Parler account at Greg Penglis. But there's more details to this. I mean, this is a big article. All right. So feel free to take a look at it. National File. This is in today's National File. I think it's one of the top headlines. We have a little less than 2 minutes. So,
man, you're tired.
So I'm tired. Well, I've been working hard the last few days. I haven't been feeling that well myself. So I got to go to my local pharmacy, get some pharmacy. I'm debating whether to do that or go ahead to Brew Angels, you know, my local pub, and celebrate a little St. Patrick's Day. I'll see. Maybe I'll skip the beer. In fact, I'm sure I'll skip the beer.
Do the Blue Angel.
I'll have my corned beef and cabbage.
Blue Angel.
This is, well, you know, this is mentally exhausting because there's so much information I'm trying to keep straight in my head.
Yeah.
You know, there's more articles. I've got more stuff here, too. I've got a couple of really fascinating articles on how lockdowns do nothing and all the things we gave up, all of our constitutional rights. I've got two things. I got one from Bill Gertz, you know, and one from a Chinese virologist that said it came from the Wuhan lab. There's more articles I skipped that I didn't get to. And, they're all there. But the point is, I got a minute left. Let me sum it up.
I know it's about money, and they do have a lot of money already, but now it's just about power and control and to depopulate the human in the world. Because look at what China does. They only allow for you to have two children. So, you
but,
know.
But how, they used to have one. But how are they going to sell vaccines if they reduce the world population? See, I'm not convinced of that yet. I'm not sure what's going on because there's many different factors, many different people. In 30 seconds, let me sum up what happened. Folks, they came up with this messenger RNA technology. They didn't know where to do it. They didn't know where to put it. They didn't want to spend the billions of dollars in clinical trials and wait 10 years to bring it out. So they created a virus using gain of function. They increased the effectiveness of the virus. All right. They used HIV technology, HIV, you know, genetic material, put it all in here, and they pushed this on the public. And it's all a farce. Well, I don't have time to explain it. I'll have to do it tomorrow. We're out of time. I'll pick it up tomorrow. Greg Pengel's here for Action Radio at blogtalkradio.com/citizenaction. There's more to tell.